This is number 7. Leadership training is an all-important factor in any organization. Initial and ongoing training programs influence the morale of your people. Make the commitment that your people will never be out of a training program. All of us are constantly learning things, so you might as well invest in an effort to teach those things which will best benefit the organization. The relevancy of your training and continuing education will help keep your training efforts on the positive side of morale building. In developing leadership abilities, concentrate on interpersonal skills and strategic thinking skills. Also, take courses in functional areas about which you know least. It is important to stay up to date in your field. Effective leaders are constantly learning. They are constantly looking for ways to improve themselves and their organization. Leadership is an art, a performing art. And in the art of leadership, the artist instrument is the self. The mastery of the art of leadership comes with the mastery of the self. Ultimately, leadership development is a process of self-development. Leaders are also in the business of learning about others. You must strive to improve your own understanding of others and build your skills to mobilize people's energies toward higher purposes. Leaders must be interpersonally competent. You must be able to listen, take advice, lose arguments, and follow. Unless you can develop the trust and respect of your followers, then you cannot lead. And in the art of leadership to others, you must provide them with the training to make use of their decision-making power and discretionary tasks. Successful quality programs, for example, all have in common the fact that the group members receive training in basic statistical measurement, methods, group communication skills, and problem-solving techniques. Without training and coaching, people will be reluctant to exercise their authority because they do not know how to perform the critical task, or they fear being punished for making mistakes when they do perform the task. It's important, therefore, that you be in continual training and that you have your people in continuous training. An interesting illustration of this principle of training: the street sweepers at Disney World go through 4 days of training. Not because it takes that long to learn trash pickup, but because Disney expects their street sweepers to answer questions about the park. A second thing that we notice as a leader is that any good leader must be steadfast in his leadership. The effective leader realizes that new tomorrows are not realized without hard work and persistence. To be at your personal best as a leader will require relentless effort, steadfastness, competence, planning, attention to detail, and encouragement. Tom Peters, co-author of In Search of Excellence and Passion for Excellence, summarized this practice superbly when he stated, "The only magic is brute consistency, persistence, and attention to detail." Leaders act in ways that are consistent with their beliefs. They are persistent in pursuit of their visions, and they're always vigilant about little things that make a big difference. This kind of leadership can give people hope, and by giving your people hope, you enable them to preserve, to persevere and persist in moments of hardship and times of uncertainty and turbulence. Often, says one company president, success is just a day-by-day grinding out process. With hope, you make the impossible a possibility and then motivate people in their drive to transform the possibility into reality. A third thing, as a leader, any good leader must be a communicator of truth. Communication is a vital leadership skill. The more that people know about what is going on in the organization, the better off you're going to be. Without information, you can be certain that people will not extend themselves to take responsibility. Armed with information, people's creative energies can be harnessed to achieve extraordinary results. Information empowers people, strengthening their resolve and providing them the resources they need to be successful. When communications in an organization are functioning properly, all personnel receive the information they need in order to do their jobs. Effective communications include provisions not only for the sending of the message from the top down, but also for the reception of the message from the bottom all the way up. One writer made this statement: "You encourage your people to communicate first by setting the example, by being a good communicator yourself. The second step is to set a policy which will draw attention to good communication. The third is to back up your policy with an efficient management reporting system." Someone has pointed out the wide diversity of information that can enter into the communication process, as well as the various messages in the process as it proceeds from element to element. It's a cyclical pattern which repeats itself over and over again as the various distortion points in the process are passed. We find, therefore, that there are several stages involved in the communication process. Number one, what the source intends to say. The message originates in the mind of the speaker. Assuming he has some understanding of what he wants to convey to other people, he then frames a sequence of words or symbols which will serve as a transportation vehicle for his idea. At this point, the message is known only to him and exists only in this form. Then number two, what the source actually says. Unfortunately, what one intends to say and what one actually says may not accurately offer a glimpse at the reality of this problem. Who among us has not had to say on some occasion, "I didn't mean to say that," or "that didn't come out just the way I wanted it to"? Already in its second stage of communication, the message has been subject to the possibility of distortion. The mouth is not always an accurate channel for the mind. So again, looking at these stages involved, number one, we said what the source intends to say. Number two, what the source actually says. Number three, what the source has said. There's still a third version of the message. The source may not have taken into proper consideration the field of experience of the hearer, the emotional state in which he found himself at the time of the encoding of the message, or the deficiencies in the encoding process itself. What the source has said. And then number four, what the receiver wants to hear. Every hearer brings to a communication situation some expectation of what he is going to hear. This expectation is framed by one's own personal desires, the prompting of another, or the reputation of the speaker himself. So we've noticed now these four different processes or stages in the communication process. Now number five, what the receiver hears. It is possible, and even not improbable, that the original message in the mind of the source, what the speaker says, what the speaker thinks he says, and what the receiver hears, are not always actually the same. It's easy to say that what the speaker says and what the hearer hears must be one and the same, since only one set of words or set of symbols could be involved between the two. But such a conclusion fails to take into consideration the variable factors of the encoding-decoding processes. What the receiver hears is colored by what he wants to hear, what he understands about the subject being dealt with, and by the pattern and makeup of his own mind. Sometimes even the basic words themselves fail to get through. How much more distorted is the meaning which those words convey? Words are only vehicles to carry thought. So then six, what the receiver thinks he hears. The same problem of confusion that we discussed earlier enters here in terms of what a speaker thinks he's heard. A young executive is being scolded by a superior for having routed a sales order in the wrong direction. His response, "But sir, I distinctly understood you said that..." Again, it's important to recognize that the receiver is acting not upon what the speaker thought he said, not upon what the receiver heard, but rather what the receiver thinks he heard. The challenge for the effective leader is to make all six of these communicative stages identical. The feedback element is the built-in factor which lets the communicator know whether the messages have gone through on the same wavelength. Wise leaders must recognize the points at which misunderstandings may enter the communication process. It is essential to keep a constant vigil against distortions of the message if interpersonal relationships are to be carried on smoothly within the framework of organizations. Number four, effective leaders must be an example to others. If leaders ask followers to observe certain standards, then leaders need to live by the same rules. Leadership is not a spectator sport. Leaders don't sit in the stands and watch. Neither are leaders in the game substituting for the players. Leaders are coaches. They show others how to behave both on and off the field. They demonstrate what is important by how they spend their time, by the priorities on their agenda, by the questions they ask, by the people they see, the places they go, and the behaviors and the results they recognize and reward. Every step a leader takes and every move he or she makes is watched. Leadership is a dramatic art. Leaders are always on stage. The most powerful mechanisms for modeling the way are represented by the leader's routines. The fifth thing as we consider as a leader, and it would be just this. Effective leaders must be a builder of others. One old proverbial saying shares this. If you want 1 year of prosperity, grow grain. If you want 10 years of prosperity, grow trees. If you want 100 years of prosperity, grow people. Leadership, therefore, is a relationship between leaders and the people they aspire to lead. A failure to understand that leadership is a shared responsibility has led many managers to take what is often called a heroic view of leadership. Managers as heroes accept singly the responsibility for their departments and believe that they should know everything that's going on and be able to solve any problems that arise. It's this view that actually prevents excellence from being attained in contemporary organizations. The old saying, "You're only as good as your people make you," has stood the test of time. Leaders alone do not make a company work. This means that there must be shared vision and values to bind the employees together in collaborative pursuits. This allows people to feel a sense of ownership and responsibility. This promotes people's working together to ensure each other's success. Leaders come to realize that the key to doing well lies not in competition or in overcoming others, but rather in gaining their cooperation. The leader, therefore, makes it a point to provide team members with opportunities to associate and intermingle. They break down barriers between people by encouraging interactions across disciplines and departmental lines. With collaborative goals, integrative thinking, and trusting relationships, people are ready to work with one another to make extraordinary things happen. By strengthening others and giving away power, the leader turns this readiness into action. Leaders know that they cannot do it alone. It takes partners to get the work done. Therefore, leaders build teams with spirit and cohesiveness. They actively involve others in planning. They give them discretion to make their own decisions. Leaders make others feel like owners, not hired hands. leaders develop collaborative goals and cooperative relationships with colleagues. They are considerate of the needs and interests of others. They know that these relationships are the keys that unlock support for their projects. They make sure that when they win, everyone wins. Mutual respect is what sustains extraordinary group efforts. Leadership creates an atmosphere of trust and human dignity. They nurture self-esteem in others. They make others feel strong and capable. I think we notice a sixth truth about as a leader. It's really a foundational truth of any leader. It's often been said that the final test of leadership is whether or not anyone is following. Leadership is a relationship between leaders and followers. A complete picture of leadership can be developed only if we ask followers what they look for or admire in a leader. Research indicates that followers want leaders who are honest, leaders who are competent, leaders who are forward-looking, and leaders who are inspiring. Followers determine whether someone possesses leadership qualities that they are willing to follow. The point is this: the attitude of the followers toward the leader is a common indicator of leader effectiveness. How well does the leader satisfy follower needs and expectations? Do the followers like, respect, and admire the leader? Are the followers committed to carry out the leader's request? There are, of course, various signs that a leader's leadership is being rejected. According to Danny Cox, some of these would include the following. Number one, an uncooperative attitude. An uncooperative attitude is generally detectable the moment you walk into a place. You can sense very quickly that something is wrong. One of the most obvious indicators of a generally uncooperative attitude is how helpful people are to you. Do they make you feel as if you're imposing on them? Does doing little or nothing seem to be more important than dealing with you? The second you come into contact with a person who has a cooperative attitude, you will recognize the difference. It's unmistakable. An uncooperative attitude is a sign that a leader's leadership is being rejected. And then a second sign of leadership rejection is a lack of enthusiasm. This can sometimes be perceived as a sense of boredom. I don't think people enjoy being bored. They must have a reason to avoid doing more interesting things, or they are being restricted from doing more interesting things. Lack of enthusiasm is a sign of leadership rejection. Number three, an absence of commitment. Here there's a general sense of melancholy about what the organization is supposed to be doing. And then a fourth sign of leadership rejection, fault finding. People who are not happy will tend to find fault in anything, everything, and everybody. A fifth sign of leadership rejection, increasing complaints. When complaining seems to be a favorite activity, you can bet folks are not having a good time. Complaining usually takes place quietly out of the leader's hearing. By the time the leader becomes aware of the complaining, it has usually had time to become fairly serious.